This is a Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast, and I might be able to prove that this week if the award actually arrives in the mail. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and I'm a blogger, a podcaster, a writer. You name it, I do it. I'm just an all-around functional nerd. What can I say? And tonight, I have gathered a bunch of people to talk about 2015 conventions that we really want to attend, because I'm going to a couple. Woo! Let's go down the list and say hello to some folks. First up, I haven't talked to him in a really long time, so I want to get him out there quickly and so he can say hello, and that's Django Wexler.
Yes, it's been forever.
I know.
It's like I don't even remember how to do this. I'm Django Wexler, if you I don't know, haven't heard me say this like the last three times. I write fantasy books. I write an adult fantasy starting with The Thousand Names and a kid's fantasy starting with The Forbidden Library. I blog occasionally on SF Signal at Lost in Anime Land. And my website is djangowexler.com or Django Wexler on Twitter, Django with a D, as always. And I think my next actual release is an anthology called Operation Arcana. That John Joseph Adams edited that comes out in March 3rd. So I'm looking forward to that.
And I'm going to throw this out there for you, Django. Last couple times you mentioned that you've been furiously working on edits and finishing, right?
I sent them to the editor.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Now okay. I'm waiting to get it back. I mean, edits are kind of like boomerangs. You send them out and they come right back at you. But yes. But this round is done.
So I wanted
only
to,
like, 2 days late.
I wanted to contrast what you have said and done with what one of my other panelists says and does. So when my other panelist is working on furiously finishing a book or doing edits, I get the reply, no, I'm furiously working on the book and getting edits. Whereas you go, yeah, I'll be on.
Yeah, well, that's because I'm really good at procrastinating. So when I'm furiously working on edits, that's the time to hit me up for anything that is not edits if you need a favor.
And of course, I'm talking about Gail.
Hi. Yes, I'm usually, although I will say that I'm behind on edits at the moment, and here I am. So I keep saying this. This is my year of letting go and being more zen about things and good. Trying to do more things that I want to do. I don't think my editors are going to be very happy about this decision, but so far I've been feeling great about it. So I'm here, even though I got these suckers are due. So awesome. Wahaha.
Well, I'm so glad you're here.
I'm delighted to be here. But, you know, we're talking about conventions, so yes. Of course.
And did you see the picture going around on the social media of the cat that's built from the parts of a typewriter?
I have, yeah. It's so cool.
It is, and it looks very steampunky to me. I don't know why. I almost imagine it's a mechanical.
Yeah, maybe someone was inspired.
And Gail, do you have anything you want to tell people about before I introduce somebody else?
No, go for it. I'm, you know.
All right. Next up, we haven't spoken on air in a really, really long time, and that's because she's super busy raising the next generation of science fiction aficionados and doing space stuff. Really cool, awesome space stuff. I actually have pinned all my hopes and dreams of ever going to space on this person. No pressure. No pressure whatsoever. I just assume that as long as she's still in that industry and working towards stuff, I've got an in.
Space janitor. That's the next up, right, Patrick?
Yes, Karen, yes.
Hey, so I'm Karen Burnham, and let's see. So what I've been saying is, you know, in the last few years, I've worked on the Orion spacecraft, which mm-hmm. recently launched, and that was a whole ton of fun. And I also worked on the very unfortunately late lamented Dream Chaser spacecraft, which does not look like it's going to launch anytime soon, but was so very, very pretty. I'm an electromagnetic compatibility engineer by day. I'm a science fiction reviewer by night. Unfortunately, because Dream Chaser did not win the NASA contract, I'm an unemployed electromagnetic compatibility engineer. So if anybody happens to have any friends who need one of those, just let me know.
Yeah, that's temporary. That's temporary. And we need to point out. Yeah, and we need to point out she had nothing whatsoever to do with the Virgin stuff that just crashed.
No, that was not me at all. I'm also not Orbital, yeah. Who also crashed.
And had they hired her, none of that would have happened.
If you're in that industry and, like, every project you work on crashes, do you eventually stop getting work? Or is that like, is that just kind of par for the course? You know,
it sometimes really they depends explode. If it was your subsystem that turned out to have failed.
Yeah, that's probably.
It's not like the NFL, Django.
It's not like your bad luck. It's like, well, you know, he always does good work, but everything he's on explodes. I don't know what's going on.
But the one thing, but for the purposes of this podcast, I'm more of a science fiction reviewer. And for the purposes of this podcast, the one thing I want everyone to know is you remember that there's that one little category of the Hugos. It's more than half. Way down the ballot, it's called Best Related Book.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing you can nominate in that this year, and that's my book on Greg Egan, which came out from the University of Illinois Press in 2014.
Yes, which is very academic, right?
Well, you know, it's readable for an academic book, mm-hmm. I've been told.
Okay. I know that
it's available as a book or as an ebook from all the usual online suspects.
And I believe Fred has purchased every version of it that's available.
He's a sweetheart.
That's Fred. Yes. But you know, I kid you not, I do pin all my hopes and dreams of a jetpack on Karen. I'm hoping someday I'll have a jetpack.
I'm too smart to ever think that we will ever let normal people have jetpacks.
What is it with that? Patrick, come on.
You were stuck in traffic today. Can you imagine how much worse that traffic would be with jetpacks?
Yeah. I would have flown over it.
The important thing about a jetpack is that only I get to have one. Then all the problems were resolved. Right?
There you go.
I want a jetpack. It should be my jetpack, not anybody else's. Damn it. You're like DiNardo. DiNardo doesn't want me to have a jetpack either. It's like his first reaction was, no, you'll kill yourself. Or somebody else. It'll be terrible. Think of all the accidents.
It's just because he cares about you, Patrick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Either that or he just... If he wanted you to die, he'd give you a jetpack.
Right.
I come from a NASA safety culture, so jetpacks equal hell. We don't even let astronauts have those things.
It does sort of seem like it would be hard to avoid frying your own legs.
No. Don't the astronauts have the little jets in their suits to help them maneuver?
Do you know how much easier it is to do that in a micro G environment? Like those little puffs would, you know. Seriously, I think my infant son could put out more force than that when he breathes.
In the meantime, Karen's going to totally build us a viable spacecraft that can take off and get us into space safely and then land and all that good stuff.
That's what I'm working on.
That's what she's working on. So, okay. Jeff, hi.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
So, two things. Number one, you with the jetpack, you're going to keep losing your hat.
Well, I'll do the Indiana Jones thing.
Okay.
Harrison Ford, he uses a stapler.
And number two, Patrick, if you're going to be attending conventions this year, please remember that you can leave the hotel lobby once in a while. You don't have to spend all your time in the hotel
lobby. Not true. If I sit in the hotel lobby, everybody comes to me.
No.
I have seen Patrick in the dealer's room. It's the hotel lobby and the dealer's room.
Mm-hmm. I don't believe it. I have to see to believe it. Hi, Jeff Patterson. I'm Jeff Patterson 11 on Twitter. I blog at Gravity Lens, which is you can be found at Bad Day Studio. And I am one third of the three horsemen who are also eligible for a Hugo this year, if one was so inclined.
Yep. I especially liked your third or fourth episode in December. That was one of my favorites.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Kind of dragged a little, but I was happy with it.
All about comic books.
If we're doing Hugo begging, can I mention that
yes.
I am eligible for the Campbell Award? This is my last year for that.
Uh-huh.
And it's not technically a Hugo Award, but if anyone was inclined to nominate me for the Campbell, I would be forever grateful.
That'd be awesome. I'd love to see you in a tiara.
I would wear the tiara if that's what it takes.
Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. Yeah, and actually, since we're talking about Hugos, there's tons of great and wonderful things out there that are Hugo eligible. Our bagel overlord, who's been overthrown by our Snickers overlord, has put a post up on sfsignal.com that actually talks about all the different contributors and all the different things that they are eligible for, which is wonderful. And you can just go there. You can see everybody. It's everybody who contributes to SF Signal. I believe, Django, you're even on the list.
Although, can I just interject something?
Yes.
And say that I'm not eligible for anything, and I don't really care. But I really had the best time of my life accepting. So anybody wants me to accept? That is like, guys, that is the way to do it. It is like, because there's no pressure at all. And you get to go and hang out and that's yeah. It. And
so
go
I, to the after I don't need party. To win a Hugo. I need to have friends who win a Hugo.
Yes! That
and
is
and then the make sure that they can't attend.
Exactly. Yes. And ideas. Then sabotage them.
So just so you both understand, I'm going this year, damn it. Just in case.
Curses.
I am not going this year. So if by some chance I win the Hugo, then I can nominate Gail to accept for
so,
me.
So yes! if you don't go and you're nominated for the Campbell, what are you going to do?
I have no idea. I mean, the problem is and
Wait. It's your sacred duty if you're nominated for the Campbell to pick the friend who would look the most ridiculous in a tiara.
Okay.
Which is not me. So
yeah,
I can't
pull off a tiara.
I like, totally can pull off a tiara, darling, anytime. I'm wearing one now. Yeah.
she's wearing her tea tiara.
I don't
tiara.
Know that I have a lot of friends who would look more ridiculous in a tiara than I would. my brother has inconsiderately decided to hold his wedding on the weekend of Worldcon. So
well, what's up with that?
Dude.
Well, hey, didn't you mention John Joseph Adams did something for you, like edited something?
Well, he's the editor of this anthology that
I and you know what he did?
What?
He had his wedding at Worldcon.
That's pretty good. I should tell Cody, my brother, to do that.
Yes,
I had friends who had their bachelor and bachelorette parties at our local convention, and that works pretty well too, let me just say.
That'd be cool.
Actually, I did my bridal shower was at a con back in the day.
All right. I'll suggest that. I don't know how well it'll go over.
All right, so let's get back on track, or at least let's try to find the track from where we are. So we're talking about conventions. We are, and this is what we're here to talk about is our favorite conventions, the things that we can't wait to attend in 2015, right? Give or take.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Worldcon is obviously one of them. I was incredibly super bummed that I could not go to Worldcon because it has become such a wonderful experience for me. All the kidding aside from Jeff and everybody, I love to go and see all the people that I've talked to on the podcast. I love to see all the authors. I love to meet them. I love the dealer's room, as Karen suggested. I just love going through there and seeing, you know, all the books and all the shirts and all the gadgets and the Dalek and the Game of Thrones thing and you name it. I love it all. So I am going to Worldcon this year. That's like the big one for
Yay!
Me.
And
who
I
else
also
is
have my membership and hotel reservation for what that's worth.
I do too. And unfortunately, my reservation for the hotel is short 2 days.
Ooh. Patrick. We should have a little conversation later.
Okay.
But I also I'm going to Spokane, I think. I have my hotel reservation, but I don't think I might have signed up for programming, but I don't think I've bought my attendance yet.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I might have. I can't keep track of these things. No, I haven't because I'm not firm. I'm not firm yet for various complicated summer plan reasons. Mm-hmm. So, but I am really hoping to go. I should say it's going to be a very interesting convention. So Spokane won the bid on second votes rather than primary votes. It's a weird location for a Worldcon. It has advantages and disadvantages. The disadvantages being it's cheap. I mean, that's an
advantage.
Disadvantages, a lot of the East Coaster element is probably not going to be there because World Fantasy was in D.C. last year, and it's going to be in Saratoga Springs this year. And so they're mostly going to not be coming, I don't think. But the West Coast contingent probably will.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of us in the middle, too.
And yeah. And then the other advantage is there's nothing else to do, really. So almost everybody is just going to be hanging out at the convention and at the convention party hotel. Well, so
I do remember very, very distinctly because it was San Antonio Worldcon, where the vote between Spokane and its opposing bid was Helsinki.
Yeah.
Helsinki, Finland.
And Florida. And Orlando,
oh,
Florida.
That's right. And there was Florida. Yeah. And I have to admit, I was a huge Helsinki, Finland backer. And so for any, but I have no trouble going to Spokane. You know, the winner's the winner, and I love Worldcon wherever it is. But for people who might have been slightly disappointed that Spokane seems like a slightly, you know, less exotic or less interesting destination than Helsinki, if granted cheaper and easier to get to for Americans, Helsinki is putting together another strong bid for 2017. So that's, and that will be voted on this summer. So that's something to keep in mind.
And who, and before you go on, Django, Karen, who can vote?
The people who can vote in a site selection are the members and I think also supporting members, although there is Hugo rules, people will need to check that, of the Worldcon that year. So you vote, if you're a member of 2015, either attending or supporting, you can vote for 2017. The vote is at the moment set for 2 years ahead.
And 2016 is Kansas City, I think, right?
Ooh, I believe that's
Kansas
true.
City.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Kansas City, here I would, come.
And so after Spokane and Kansas City, come on. Doesn't Helsinki sound good after that?
Well, and there are a couple of others out that have thrown their hats in early, too. Like Dublin is putting in a strong bid for 19. Yeah. So,
I'd like to go there.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of... Yeah, it's fun. One of the fun things.
So if I went I went to Dublin, I could see Gareth. Gareth Kavanaugh.
There's a lot of fun. Like that's part of the fun of being at a Worldcon is figuring out where the next one's going to be.
I think there's a movement to get Worldcon in New Zealand in 2020. Oh,
yes, New Zealand is bidding for 2020.
I would be all over that.
I would too. Yeah. I would
have to go, but that's a long trip.
I would lose a ton of weight so I could fit in Karen's bag that she carries on. Yeah.
I was going to say, for those who are coming to Spokane, which I, of course, isn't that what it's called?
Spokane.
No, the con is Spokane. That's what in the venerable tradition of terrible con puns.
It's Sasquan.
Oh, is it Sasquan? It is. Yeah. Okay. I'm just making that up then. Anyway, for those who are coming, if you stop by Seattle before or after, me and my local Seattle sci-fi author friends are going to try and put some dinners and some excitement together. So if anyone is going to be in town, you know, drop me a line on Twitter or something.
So it sounds like everybody except Jeff is excited about Worldcon.
Yeah, I doubt I'm making it this year.
You're an East Coaster.
Yeah.
That's a bit far for you to go.
Okay, so Jeff, where are you going instead?
I got a few I'm going to.
So hold on. So Worldcon is August 19th through the 23rd. They have moved it off of what I'm just going to start calling DragonCon weekend.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, it's also my birthday weekend, which I think is the real reason they did it.
Well, yeah, they want to make sure that Jeff can't get a table on his birthday.
Precisely.
So, Jeff, where are you going?
Are you going to go to Saratoga Springs? Are you going to fulfill my prophecy?
That's up in the air right now. I really want to, but that's a couple things have to happen before that happens. Chronologically, the first one I'm going to hit is going to be RavenCon down in Richmond, Virginia, which is somewhat local for me. That's in April. I went last year. I met up with Jamie Todd Rubin. And this year, I think Alan Steele is guest of honor. And it was good. It was a good con. It was a, had a degree of author, a degree of comics, a degree of cosplay and stuff like that. However, I am truly hoping that this is the year that I go back to ReaderCon because I've missed it the last 3 years and I'm climbing the walls not having been at it. I've been to every ReaderCon except, aside from the three I missed, I had been to every ReaderCon except the second one. Mm. And it is still my favorite convention. Now that I'm in Virginia, the last few years I have been to Capclave up in Gaithersburg, Maryland, which is the convention that has the closest vibe to ReaderCon that I've ever been to. It's a very, very similar vibe, mostly book-oriented, most of the same dealers in the dealers room, quite frankly.
The company that I work for has a branch in Gaithersburg.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're, we're going to talk about it offline. So
yeah, it's lots of, I can get to it via some very, very destitute back roads. So it's kind of a weird vibe. You're driving through the middle of dead farm country and suddenly, boom, you're in this little town that, that has a convention. So that's, I mean, that's a 25 minute drive for me. So that one's a no brainer. The one con that I have never been to that I hope to make it to this year is ElluxCon, which is the science fiction illustration and art convention. It's going to be up in Allentown, Pennsylvania in October, actually a couple weekends after CapClave.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, and this is the eighth year, and I was going to go 2 years ago. But I had some scheduling issues, and I'm really hoping to get up to it. May even try to exhibit at it. But I've never been to the closest thing to an art convention is the fact that they had such a big art track at Boscone for a few years, and the fact that the Boscone Art Show is as large and expansive and as well done as it is every year. So I really want to do something a bit more art centric, especially after having seen that the art show at World Fantasy with all the Virgil Finley stuff and stuff like that. It really got me charged up for spending a lot of time with a lot of illustration. Mm. I really enjoyed that.
I totally thought you were going to end that sentence spending a lot of money.
Yeah. No, I did not. It's funny because since I've lived here, I mean, I still haven't unpacked most of my art. I've still got about 15 or 16 framed prints that are sitting in storage right now. So I don't think I'll be buying any more for a while.
So Karen, I'm not so good with math, and I'm very upfront about that. That's why I am not anywhere near being any sort of engineer. But isn't there like a way that you can tell you can like extrapolate someone's spending based on how much they spend in like the first 10 minutes kind of thing? Could you come up with some sort of math like that?
Oh, you mean like sociological statistics instead of electromagnetic fields?
What I'm trying to figure out is if someone spends all of 2 hours at a convention, and the convention lasts an entire weekend, and in that 2 hours, they spend easily $100, if not more. Could you extrapolate how much they would have spent if they'd spent the entire time at the convention?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No idea at all, huh?
None. That is not a familiar situation to me in any way, shape, or form. Mile High Con was lovely for the whole 2 hours I was there.
Oh, Lord.
What did you buy? Now I'm fascinated.
Amongst other things, let's see, at least one book from a person that Patrick aimed me at.
Yep.
And a very fine hat.
So,
can I
just
say that statement is so true? I've been trying to figure out how to describe what it was like hanging out with Patrick in the lobby, and that's exactly it. He aims you at people.
Right.
You become his gun.
You know what?
A bullet fired from his gun.
So I tell people this, and they don't believe me because they listen to the podcast. I actually am quite introverted and quite shy. And I know you guys are all stunned to silence now, but I work really hard not to be. I'm trying to be more extroverted. And part of going to these conventions and doing these podcasts and doing different things is to get myself out of my comfort zone and talk to people and interact and do more stuff. And so what really helped me was the first con I went to, big con, right? After many, many years of not going anywhere to any cons or anything, like I went to a lot of creation cons and then I didn't go anywhere for a long time. And the first big con I go to is World Fantasy. And I'm so glad that I did. And I'm so glad that I went there with John DiNardo and John Anelio, because it gave me a little bit of a, like a comfort zone to have the two of them there with me. And then John DiNardo is the guy who recognizes everybody and introduces everybody. And I love it. I love it. I love that he's like, oh, look, you know, there's Robert Silverberg. and he'll point them out to you. Oh, and you know, there is such and such, and there is such and such. And he just starts pointing people out and kind of like, hey, let's go over there and talk to them. And so that helped me a lot. And I really liked that he did that. And then when we met Jay Lake, Jay Lake was very similar. He would introduce you to people. He would, you know, he would kind of take you and say, here's this person, this person, this person, and you should really talk to this person. And then we met all sorts of people who were very similar to that.
There are these little like networkers who know everyone, you know. Yeah, connectors. Yes. And I don't mean that in any kind of negative way.
No.
Like
yeah.
Mike Cole is another one who's just a super sweet, really nice guy and just like remembers everybody's names and just is always like introducing people. And
For me it was Kat Rambo, who is a fellow client of my agent, who like he brought all his clients in this area and we all had dinner and I started hanging out with her and she just introduced me to everyone under the sun because she knows everybody and everybody loves her.
Well, and so you're so lucky when you like I happen to now be best friends with the one of the editors at Locust Magazine. And so like, and they really know everyone and it's their business to know everyone and be able to identify everybody. Cause they're, you know, she's running around with a camera around her neck, taking photographs the entire time. But yeah, she really does know everybody.
And I had a very similar experience. I went to 3 Worldcons, I think, before I hooked up with the folks from Locust. And then within, you know, instead of, you know, 3 Worldcons where I went and I went to panels and it was nice, but I didn't really, you know, feel that connected. But I was like, I feel like these are my people. And then after I really got, you know, to be friends with the folks at Locus, all of a sudden within a year, I knew everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's what it's like. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and Christopher Garcia is another one who does that.
Oh,
and
Chris Garcia. Yeah.
And
he's
so
crazy.
And so I try to do that too. And I try to introduce people.
That's the point, is that then you're like, okay, I got to pass the level on.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
Exactly.
You guys would like each other. Like, you should know each other.
Right. Exactly. So yeah. So the Mile High Con story I bring up because Mile High Con is one of my favorites. It's local here to Denver. It's a great literary con. We tend to have a lot of great people. And yes, Karen got to go for all of 2 hours and spend a ton of money.
When is Mile High?
In October.
October.
Yeah. It's usually right around my birthday. So 2 years ago, it was on my birthday. So it was like October 16th through the 20th. This year, I think it was a little bit later. So it's a great con, great community, lots of really good people running it. It's just so much fun.
And I will say, I went to 2 half panels at Mile High Con.
One of which pissed you off.
And one of which totally pissed me off. Yep. And the other of which was like, hey, this is a whole ton of fun.
Yeah.
So,
and who was part of the one that was all the fun?
I believe that was you, Patrick.
It was me and Curtis. We were both there.
Oh, so the panel was in the lobby then.
Again, I maintain I've seen Patrick in other environments. Not often, but sometimes.
It's a life-size puppet.
Yes. So, Gail, what's a con that you're like super excited about this year?
Well, I'm actually going down to New Zealand for the New Zealand National Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention this year. So I'm really excited about that. That one, we're kind of in the process of planning right now. And because it's bracketed by so many other events for me, because the spring is always super busy, I can't stay as long as I like. So I really hope that eventually they win the 2020, because I want to go. I already know this will be my second time, and I know I'm going to want to go back down again. but yeah, I managed to finagle them to fly me and my partner. So
nice.
We're both going. It's going to be so much fun. So I'm staying for about a week and a half, basically.
Are you gonna be anywhere near where all the Lord of the Rings stuff happened?
I've actually visited Hobbiton, so and the Rotorua is near enough that the convention is actually putting on a bus to go see it. Aww. If people want to. And I'm gonna mention it to my partner and see, but if you know he wants to go. But I having seen it once, I'm like, oh, it's very cute. It's not a huge deal for me. I don't really geek out about that kind of thing. So that one's you know, there's not much point in me like giving it a shout out because a lot of people can't go. But it's like the New Zealand's whole national sci-fi convention, and I think it's like 800 people or something because it's a tiny country.
Yeah, we have a couple listeners there. They might show up and say hey.
I think it's gonna like and like the last time I was in New Zealand, I just like couldn't get over how incredibly sweet everybody was. So I think fandom is just gonna be even nicer, and I can't wait. And I already have friends who are gonna be there. So because Pip and T are gonna be there.
Awesome.
So
Jeff, you going
to New Zealand? No, I won't be. No, I'll be missing that.
So. Okay.
He's gonna save up for 2020.
There you go.
And then I'm going to the Steampunks World Fair in New Jersey, which is the other one I'm really, really excited about. And that one's, I can't remember when it is, but it must be April or May? April, I think. One of the only steampunk fandoms I've never really interfaced with is East Coast steampunk. So it'll be my first like East Coast steampunk event. So I'm super, super excited about that. And I know I have a bunch of people like on the staff and there who, you know, love my books, and we're going to have tea, and it's going to be great.
Do you know when that is?
If you give me a second, I will look it up.
Because I know in the Denver area, we have the Anomaly Con. Which is our steampunk convention.
Which is great. And I've been to that one, and it was a blast.
And that one's in March.
A lot of them are in March.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for some reason. Well, March is actually, as a rule, a pretty good month for conventions. It's not a lot of other stuff that people are spending money on in that month. And so they... May 15th through the 17th.
Okay.
In Poughkeepsie.
Poughkeepsie?
Piscataway? No.
Oh, Piscataway.
Piscataway.
Yep.
There you go.
I've been there.
There it is.
Not that
that's
I've
where
gone,
it is.
But to that town.
I've had
Radisson.
I've had Piscetti.
We had a, I think 2 or 3 years ago, we went up to they had one, a steampunk festival up in Gettysburg that was really good, but they didn't do it the year later. And the other one that I really liked that I went to 2 years in a row was up in Waltham, Mass. It used to be called International Steampunk City. I think it's now called the Watch Festival because there's an old watch factory that's there. And it was interesting because it took over the entire downtown.
They'll be like interactive outer, you know, elements sometimes. Like we have something here called the Handcar Regatta, which is a steampunk basically event. And it's all outdoors in the middle of the summer, you know, you know, like a Renaissance fair or something.
Yeah, the one in Waltham, they actually had a calliope competition.
Nice.
Where the town green had like 7 calliopes set up, and they demonstrated them all. And I was like, you know, that's something you don't see every day. So
that's funny.
Very cool. Karen. Oh, I'm sorry, Gail. Was that your list?
Yeah. Well, there's Spokane, which have my fingers crossed I'm going to make it to. And I had so much fun at World Fantasy in DC this last year that I'm really going to try for Saratoga Springs. I wasn't intending to. Usually I do World Con or World Fantasy. If I don't make World Con, I will definitely go to World Fantasy.
Awesome.
It's such an epically good con, you guys. It's really the best one.
This was my first time going this year, and I just had a great time.
It's a completely different vibe.
It is. Yeah. It's different from every other convention. There's very little paneling to none. Like, even the panels that are there, nobody really goes to. The dealer's room is all books, all books.
Yeah.
I actually saw some decent panels this time. Max Gladstone was on a really interesting panel. There were a couple.
That's unusual.
Like, maybe two in the whole weekend that I thought were like really
I saw. I did. Not,
and including
Django, I saw you on one panel. I know
yes,
that.
So. That was fun.
And there'll be a lot of author readings, and then there's the big author signing, and it is one of those conventions that has an enormous swag bag. So if you are like a dyed-in-the-wool reader, you will get it. You just get a ton of books.
Shocked me. It shocked me. I wasn't expecting books. And then the problem is when I went to my next convention, which was a WorldCon, I was pissed off that there was no books.
Yeah, the WorldCon's so good. But World Fantasy is it's turned itself slowly into my very favorite convention. And it's just because all of my friends are there because, like Patrick, like we were saying earlier, like eventually you get introduced to everybody, you meet everybody, you get your little group who you always hang out with. Mm-hmm. And pretty much, my friend Blake describes it as like returning to summer camp. Like everybody's there, you know? and everyone is at the bar every night, yep. starting with the night before it officially starts.
It has the best bar con of any con.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, totally. Although this year, the fact that our bar con coincided with a biker group.
Yeah, that was weird.
Con was.
It was great.
Fascinating.
It was great. Yeah, they were so nice.
That was one of the more interesting aspects of World Fantasy was the fact that we were sharing it with such a colorful group. and I actually now want to start doing research when I'm going to conventions to find out what other groups we might be sharing the hotel with. Because I remember San Antonio was that People Magazine Espanol family festival.
Yeah,
and they outnumbered us like 20 to 1. So I'm really hoping that someday we're going to get some really good, you know, offbeat, out of left field groups like the World Competitive Eating Convention or something like that, you know, that will have a truly discordant group that we'll be sharing it with.
Given the fact that Spokane, the hotels have all already sold out.
Yeah.
I think we're going to dominate that one no matter what.
Yep. But they keep adding more.
Bacon
who
for
else
years.
Has things in Spokane, right?
I mean, yeah, exactly. But Bacon, which is my local one for years, shared with the Charismatic Christian Society. And Bacon is a cosplay, heavy, minimal costume cosplay, shall we say.
Yeah, wait until you. I went to Bacon one year, and boy, did that throw me.
Yeah, yeah. The Californians like a bit of an exhibitionist lot, really. Right. And then one steampunk event I went to shared with a Lego event, and that was like a meeting of two minds. That like, you couldn't have had a happier two groups.
I was once at a very big anime con that was sharing with a smallish Southern Baptist convention, and it was like the poor Southern Baptists felt like they were under siege by hordes of people in strange costumes. It was there was some anger in the halls, let's say.
I want to pair a Star Wars celebration with a Star Trek convention.
Oh God!
Then we can fight it out.
Elaborately choreographed like dance fight numbers.
Yes.
See, I just loved with the bikers. I was actually in the elevator, and you know the people were making an attempt at small talk, and one of the people in the elevator actually said to one of the bikers, "Hey, I wrote a biker fairy short story." and the biker, to his immense credit, took that with a really good sense of humor.
That's the most charming thing ever.
That's funny.
That is very funny.
Patrick, I think it was the 1996 ReaderCon in Marlboro, Mass, before they moved to Burlington. We shared the hotel with there was a wedding going on, and the bride side of the family all came from the Bronx and Queens. There was probably about 200 of them, and they got the rest of the rooms at the hotel that the convention was at. And all they did was complain about, why is everybody got their nose in a book? They're so antisocial.
Well, that happened at World Fantasy this year, too. Right after the bikers left, there was this massive traditional Hindu-Indian wedding came through. I think it was Hindu. Anyway, and beautiful. Like the most gorgeous saris. And like it was just – and there's the dregs. This was like Sunday night or maybe even – it was Sunday night. The dregs of the con, like all of us hungover and in black and like, blah, you know, this stunning thing occurs in front of us. It's almost hallucinatory.
So, Karen, I was going to ask you, did you have any that you're particularly looking forward to this year?
Okay, so here's my ideal. Like, if I could plan my year around my con schedule, here's how it would go. ICFA in March, ReaderCon in July, WorldCon in August, World Fantasy in October, early November. That's my ideal. And then, you know, local, wherever I can be. I've gone to BayCon, I've gone to LostCon, Mile High Con. That was awesome. Now, let me explain ICFA, because that's one that we haven't talked about yet. International Conference for the Fantastic and the Arts. This year, it's held the week of March 19th, same week as St. Patrick's Day, appropriately. And
you're going to be sharing space with a bunch of Irish people, like myself?
No, unfortunately. No. So ICFA is so small. It's smaller than any of the cons we've talked about so far. It's this really interesting convention where it's half of an academic conference and half of a reader con or world fantasy. So you get a whole ton of panels of academics, you know, grad students and early tenure track people and senior tenure track people presenting actual academic papers about science fiction and fantasy in media, in horror, in science fiction, in fantasy. And it's just fascinating. And then you have a whole slate of invited professional authors and editors. And so you get this kind of meeting of the minds of these academics and these industry professionals. It's just the most fascinating thing. And it happens in March. It happens in Orlando, Florida every year, which means that all the academics and all the professionals really enjoy getting away from, you know, whatever their cold home environments might be and going to someplace warm. So the only thing we have to worry about sharing our hotel with is the occasional wedding and the occasional drunk college spring breakers.
And I just saw on Facebook Neil Clark.
Neil Clark's coming this year. Yeah. I got him for the first year.
Nice.
And basically, so in the interest of full disclosure, I've been going to this con since 2007 when I met Charles Brown at the Los Angeles WorldCon in 2006. One of the first things he told me was, you have to start coming to ICFA. And I did. I presented papers for a few years. It turns out writing academic papers about literature isn't necessarily my strong point. But since then, I've actually become one of their vice presidents. So
nice.
I'm one of the vice presidents in charge of organizing that convention. And so I want to make sure that people are aware of it. I mean, it's very different from a fan convention, but on the other hand, it's just a little bit of fascinating. And there's a lot of overlap, at least in the professional attendance, between ReaderCon and World Fantasy.
Very cool.
And one thing we really look for in our hotels is the excellent bar out by the pool.
Nice.
That's our favorite part.
And where is this held again?
So Orlando, Florida. And the website for it is actually www.iafa.org. And that's the International Association for the Fantastic in the Arts. And this is actually, I want to say, this is our 36th convention.
Wow.
36 years strong.
Very cool. Wow.
But you always get people like, you know, Andy Duncan, Kit Reed, Peter Straub are all regulars. Jeff Ford can't make it this year, but he often comes. You know, that's only a very small sliver. I think we've got 70-odd intending authors and editors this year, and I couldn't be more happy with the lineup.
Very cool. The only sad part is you said it's in Orlando. There's not really much of anything else to do there.
Right, yeah. Oh, my God. You could never go to, you know, Cape Canaveral, Space Center, Disneyland. Oh, yeah.
Disneyland is in Anaheim.
There's nothing else for them to do.
Disneyland is in Anaheim.
I am so sorry. I grew up in Southern California, and I should know better. It's Disney World.
Disney World. Yes. Very cool. Well... And you mentioned ReaderCon, as Jeff did, and then you said WorldCon or World Fantasy. Both you and Gail mentioned World Fantasy. I know Django also likes World mm-hmm. Fantasy. Do we know they tend to sell out quickly because they have a cap?
They're yeah. not. I don't know about the registration, but the hotel's not open yet. Okay. So I am not interested in going if I can't get into the hotel that is the convention hotel.
Right.
So I am waiting for the convention to open before I decide where to attend or not, whether to attend or not.
The hotel usually opens in the spring, and they usually sell out sometime in like mid to late summer.
Yeah, you usually have some time.
Depends on the guest.
Yeah, it does. Have they announced however,
they must have. Hang on, let me check. I'll be in the background checking.
What were you going to say, Jeff?
I was going to say this past year, I had put myself on the waiting list for World Fantasy, and they did get that because they knew I was local. They got back to me, I think, the beginning of the week. Yeah, I think it was Monday, and the convention started on Thursday. And
I also was lucky enough to I registered in August. I just missed the cap, and they were kind enough to let me on anyway. The guests for 2015: Steven Erickson, Chelsea Ooh. Quinn Yarbrough, Glenn Cook, ooh, and David Drake.
Wow. But it is, I mean, we should mention that Saratoga Springs means if you are ambitious as a writer, it does usually mean almost all of New York industry is also there or has a representative at World Fantasy. So, like, agents, major agents and major editors will all be in residence if you're interested in traditional publishing. And a lot of the New York authors will show up who have quite big names, but they're just there to hang out with their friends, like, you know, like Mike and Pete. And
one of my favorite moments from World Fantasy this year was when Joshua from Jabberwocky, who is, you know, a really big deal agent, had somehow acquired a chocolate model of the U.S. Capitol and was soliciting help eating it. And we had to smash it into shards just in the hotel lobby. And so we were like, people were like, Joshua needs help with his U.S. Capitol building and chocolate. And it was just a very strange experience.
There's always a big tour party usually, yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
Tour party, you can hardly move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's worth it career-wise if you can swing it and afford it to try and attend particularly an East Coast World Fantasy.
Sure.
And if you do go to the tour party, don't wear layers.
Yeah, yeah. It's 100 degrees in there.
It'll
so
be 100 hot. Degrees yeah. in there.
And humid.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you'll see someone across the room and you'll wave, but you'll never, ever... ever.
You know, Patrick, you them. Can see someone across the room and wait. I cannot see anyone across the room or anyone more than 2 feet from me.
Sorry, Karen.
Big boots, Karen. Big.
That was me being taller than you on purpose. I'm sorry. So before I go into Django, I want to throw out another one that I'm looking forward to. So I mentioned Worldcon. I mentioned Mile High Con. Those are two of my favorites. Actually, this year, John Anilio and I are going to be media guests of honor at Capricorn, which is in February. It's the Valentine's weekend.
Where's that?
It's near Chicago.
Oh, cool. Chicago Fandom is great fun. That's
actually,
cool.
They are.
Yeah, there's a what do they call it? Hold on. Westin Chicago North Shore. Wheeling, Illinois is what they call it.
Nice.
And we're going to be there with Margaret Weiss, Matt Forbeck, and a bunch of other people. So I like Chicago as a place to visit. I was born there. I don't want to live there. I plan to get lots of cannoli. They've promised me deep dish pizza.
Well, we're going to have to discuss this deep dish pizza nonsense, because I was there recently and I had my first deep dish pizza, and it is merely a large amount of bread with a small amount of toppings.
It depends on
and
where you get it.
And I object on principle.
It depends on where you get it.
Yeah, it does depend on where
but
you get
however, it. However, I will say that when it comes to Pizzagale, you're not really allowed to comment because you're from California and they put pineapple on pizza.
I lived in Italy for 2 years.
And that's wrong.
I have a pizza superiority complex. Mm.
I just want to say that the only thing I think when I think of Chicago is a science fiction critic and generally some person, Gary K. Wolf.
I was going to say Gary K. Wolf, yeah.
Yeah, it's the fandom is really awesome because you get like all the class of an East Coast city and none of the rudeness.
That's a great assessment.
Well, I'm going for the fans. I'm going for the fact that they invited us, and I think that's awesome. I'm also going for all the food. I've been promised Italian beef sandwiches as well, so that's good. And then if we're really, really desperate...
Okay, now I'm hungry.
White Castle.
What?
If we're desperate.
Does White Castle go the far west?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Really? I had no idea.
You may have to go to Cicero to get it, but yes.
Having grown up on the East Coast, I do not understand the romantic attachment some people have to White Castle.
When I was 10 years old, it was the coolest damn thing ever.
Although I do, I also don't understand deep dish pizza. I haven't grown up in New York, so you know.
Yeah, you guys don't make good pizza. You make like the gigantic
silence.
You know what? The major difference is toppings. We actually put toppings on pizza.
Good pizza shouldn't be toppings.
No. You put oily meat on top of pizza.
This is
not a topping maker.
To Spanish Harlem to go to Patsy's, where they have the best pizza in the entire world. And, well, I guess I can. In the United States, let me call.
Someday, you all will come to California, and I will take you to Zachary's.
I tell you, one thing about Seattle is that the pizza scene is not what it ought to be.
Tragedy.
We have good food here, but it's not quite up to snuff.
Is there something that Seattle's known for as far as food? Is it like fish?
Fish is good. Seafood? I mean, we have there's a huge Japanese community, so we have a lot of Japanese food, and a lot of it is really good. Probably
that's a good
best
combination.
The best Japanese food I've had in the United States has been here in Seattle. Maybe New York, but there's a lot of good food here, but just not pizza nor bagels. So, you know, your John would not be able to come here.
Well,
as far as I know, there's one place in Seattle that makes good bagels.
When I went to Seattle, obviously did the touristy thing, went to the Space Needle, right?
Uh-huh.
And there's the restaurant up there.
Yeah. Never eat in a restaurant
never
that
do
rotates.
That. Never. Never.
Right?
Never.
Yeah. I it's like I wanted to eat my dinner, but I was also getting motion sickness.
Well, it's also, I mean,
it's also never good enough.
Yeah, it's never good. Yeah. The best, when the last time I took people to Space Needle, they were having some kind of fair right outside it, and they had just like booths and booths from all these restaurants. It was fantastic. Like all this like super cheap, like fairground food. It was delicious.
By the way, can I just put in a pitch for the food truck culture that is evolving in Boulder, Colorado? Because I went to I took my kids to a Maker Faire in Loveland, Colorado, and they had just their idea of, oh, hey, we'll have food, was to have six food trucks line up outside. And the variety you could get from these gourmet food trucks was just insane. It was the best thing ever.
They do that in Portland, too. It's a huge deal.
When I went to Boston for a non-genre related convention, it was just a marketing convention for work. They did the whole thing where they gave you food tickets, right? So you could go and get your lunch or whatever you wanted. Well, they brought in food trucks every day.
And there's a rumor Tucson Festival of Books is going to do this, and
it's amazing. It's a wonderful idea.
I have my fingers crossed that it will not be crappy food trucks.
I have kind of like I've had bad experiences with food trucks because there were some at where I went to college that were just like. Like you were kind of rolling the dice with food poisoning anytime you went there, and it was like
it's
they were cheap.
Now. It's different now. It's different now. These are gourmet.
I know.
So there was like 15
and the ones in
trucks.
Portland were great. Like when we went there, it was great.
Yeah,
but,
there was like.
But I have this flashback.
I went to and I told Rose with Mile High Con, I'm like, we should do this somehow. Somehow this should happen here in Denver. Because there's a great Denver culture for food trucks as well, Karen. I don't know if you're familiar. There's tons of food trucks here that are all gourmet and really neat. So I'm all for that. But you know what? We're running out of time, and I haven't even talked to Django yet. So Django, cons that you're looking forward to this year.
Well, we've covered most of the big bases. Mm-hmm. So I'll go a little bit off the track here. I am looking forward to Phoenix Comic Con. And I know a lot of the sort of serious sci-fi fantasy literary types are disdainful of the Comic-Cons, and with some good reasons. I've been to San Diego several years, and it's, I don't know, you always feel like kind of a sixth string player at San Diego as an author, since you're not a movie star or a TV star or a comic book artist or whatever.
Well, and actually at San Diego Comic-Con, you're the sixth string, and the people actually selling comic books are the 12th.
Yeah. Although as an author, it's actually nice to go there because, like, I mean, we had a panel with authors, and so, you know, we're the sixth string guys, but there's so many people there that you still get 400 people turning up to your panel.
Yeah, but all going, is this the one with Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah. No. If there's a panel that you can walk into, then it's not the one with Robert Downey Jr. The one with Robert Downey Jr. has a line that goes all the way around the convention center six times.
Right, and has some night.
And as I think it was Gene Wolfe was at World Fantasy when I was there, and also had a line going around the block.
Book signed. So Lee Whiteside, who is one of the leaders of Phoenix Comic Con, has made a real effort to make it literary book, science fiction and fantasy, a big part of this con. So they have a big programming track, they have a bunch of authors there, and it was just really great last year. And so I'm really looking forward to it. It really felt like a good combination between the kind of the book orientedness of a smaller, like, regional sci-fi con and the sort of size and sort of density of fans of a Comic Con. These things dwarf, like, you know, Phoenix was 70,000 people. So even the biggest world con is dwarfed by that.
I was just going to add that I have a bunch of author friends who go to Phoenix and have nothing but good things to say about it. They love that con. I think
there was some kind of disaster that caused the line for, like, guest passes, not the, like, the regular reg line, but the reg for, like, authors and so on, to take forever. And it became like a mini author convention. Like, I was standing there and then, like, Kevin Hearn turned up and John Scalzi turned up and, like, all these guys are coming in, Brian McCall and then Mike Cole and all the, you know, all these guys. I guess it was all guys. I don't know. Where were the women in that convention?
It's a Comic-Con.
I was going to say, but Denver Comic-Con is trying to do the same thing, because I know a lot of the Colorado authors are going to Denver Comic-Con now, and they're getting on panels, and they're getting to participate. And it actually really pissed me off, because Travis Hearman posted a photo on his Facebook page of him with Adama. Bastard.
Having been to both San Diego and New York Comic-Cons, I feel like Phoenix is just, if you're a fan of the sort of written SFF that, and you're going to go to a Comic-Con, that seems like the one to go to. That seems like a lot of fun. I'll also put in a plug for our local cons. I'll be at NorwestCon this year, which is the sort of Seattle area.
Which is North or West?
It's both, Patrick. We're both north and west. That's always a pretty good time.
And NorwestCon, do you have a good dealer's room?
I think so. I don't, like, really recall.
How much money do you think Karen could spend there in 2 hours?
Could spend? Probably a lot. Although not as much as at Phoenix Comic Con, man. You want to talk dealer's rooms. You can go crazy there. That'll be fun, I hope. I've never actually been a participant there, and I'm doing that for the first time this year. It is traditionally fun, but a little bit on the disorganized side. So we'll see whether that works out.
So for Django and for Gail, Django first and then Gail, when you go to a convention, do you like to do readings?
It depends on the kind of con. Like, I didn't want to do a reading at World Fantasy, because the sort of author to fan ratio is
what about NorwestCon?
So low. I might do it at NorwestCon. I'd probably do it at Phoenix. Readings are not my personal favorite thing. I mean, I do them, but they're not, you know, I prefer a kind of a panel where I can just, like, talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. I've done it. It's not the first thing I seek out. It depends what the programming people want me to do.
Gail, what about you? What BayCon?
I don't like to do readings. I don't think it's my. I can't do. I can't. Well, for one thing, I almost all of my books are set in England, and I can't do a British accent, so I suck. Like, I also figure that if you want to read my books, you should read my books, and I have pretty awesome audiobook readers, so. There's your methods right there. There's a possibility if I had, say, like, a short story I wanted to promote or something, I might do a reading. But as a general rule, I prefer not to do readings. My absolute all-time hands-down favorite is a coffee clutch.
I was going to say a coffee
clutch. Yes, yeah. that
that is just, those are the bomb, both from a fan perspective and from an author perspective. They're just like, it's you and 10 to like 12 other people, and they're, you know, fans. Or occasionally I'll get somebody who's like, no, you just seemed interesting. Like, I've never read your books. And I'm like, okay, nice. Let's talk. And I, you know, I got to meet Tamara Pierce that way, who's my hero at a Coffee Clutch, a World Con. So,
well, and Mile High Con, they do that with
coffee
beer.
Coffee Clutch is actually how I first met Charles Brown and Gary Wolfe.
Oh, very cool.
Nice. Yeah, it's like, then, they're the bomb, man. They're so fun.
And six or seven years later, I think I had one of my own at San Antonio. It was just wacky.
I have been on some really fun panels over the years. I mean, sometimes panels are just kind of like, you know, you do your thing. Sometimes they're terrible, but not often. But every so often you get one with a really good moderator, usually not that many people, like three or four people who really click with it. And it just becomes, you know, just a great discussion with people that you wouldn't have, like, just gone to hang out with. Like, I've met some really interesting people that way.
You don't like the panel where there's like two absolutely iconic authors on opposite ends of the table because they hate each other and they're both trying to dominate the entire conversation. That's not your favorite?
That would be how ALAs are.
My first panel ever was at San Diego Comic-Con. So I had been published all of 3 days. No one had any idea who I was. And I was on the fantasy authors panel with, like, Brandon Sanderson, Robin Hobb, Raymond Feist, and, you know, a bunch of other famous people. And then there's me. And I'm like, I feel like I shouldn't even be talking. Like, I cede my time to the rest of the panel.
Hey, you know what? Same thing happened.
There were like 8 of us on this panel. Yeah. And of course, like, you know, 1,000 people came to see it. So it was great from a marketing point of view, but it was a little terrifying.
I got put on a panel on urban fantasy with Shauna McGuire and all these other people, and they're all introducing themselves and talking about all their books and stuff. I got nothing, right? And I do remember saying that I was a Hugo Award winner, and there was a gentleman in the audience who did like a double take, like, what? You? How? What? But anyway.
Panels are, like, I just want to add my 2 cents, which is the panels are they're make or break on the moderator.
Yeah.
If you have a bad moderator, you kind of know right from the get-go, this one's not going to jive. And I've gotten leery about certain panels that, like, as an author, you get put on the same, after a while, you get put on the same panels over and over again. You know, like, I am always on Steampunk 101 or Women in Steampunk or both. And I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I don't really want to do that one. Like, sorry, programming. I don't want to do that. I'm getting pretty lax about my panels, unless I'm GOH. And then you kind of have to
be nice. The best moderator I ever had was Colleen Lindsay from Penguin. I don't know if you know her, but she's fantastic. She's extremely formidable.
Again,
I have a panel.
She runs a very tight ship. It was great.
Yeah, those are the best moderators, are strict ones. But I have a panel at Tucson Festival, which is my next event, pretty much, with Scott Lynch, Sam Sykes, me, and Elizabeth Baer. And we're all friends with each other, and we're all loudmouths. And Mary Elizabeth Hart from Mysterious Galaxy is our moderator, who is also a friend and also a loudmouth. And I literally wrote back to the convention, and I was like, do you have any idea what you are in for? Because it is going to be out of control.
Someone tapes that. That seems like every one of those events where
it's going to be crazy. It's going to be so much fun. I'm looking forward to that panel intensely.
So I'll just point everyone to Terrible Minds, which is Chuck Wendig's blog. There is a post on there where he talks about the best moderator he's ever had at a convention. One, Patrick Hester.
Congratulations, Patrick.
Thank you. So we're totally running out of time for Karen. Karen has a heart out here in a minute. So I did want to throw out there that there is this guy who is at every Mile High Con. He's in the dealer room. He's really, really awesome. Gail, you'd love it because he puts out really nice carpets. And then he puts up these bookshelves and he builds like this cozy little corner. This year he had an old style radio with a turntable and everything. And he has these old typewriters and he has all these books. And when Karen says I pointed her at someone, that's who I pointed her at and where she ended up spending some money.
It's true. It was one of the most welcoming Dior Room and Bar I've had the pleasure to walk into. And the guy was super nice, and he knew every book. Like, you'd pull any single volume out of one of those bookcases, and you say, and he would just have this, you know, this little story about how he came to encounter mm-hmm. that book, or what that book was about, or whatever.
And he'd tell you, like, he pulled some pulps off, and he's like, now, these are not the original covers. I found someone who reproduces the covers, you know, and I thought, well, I wanted to sell them with the cool covers, so I went ahead and got the reproduction covers, and all this kind of stuff. And then he'll switch gears, and he'll tell you the entire story of that radio.
Huh.
And he's got cool lamps. And, I mean,
and he has,
just,
like, old Tom Swift volumes.
Yeah.
You know,
nice.
Swift and the Adventure of the Wireless Transmission.
Yes.
This sounds like a steampunk convention in mini.
Oh, he's such a cool guy.
He's his own wandering steampunk convention.
Yeah. Nice. So we're totally running out of time. I know Karen has a heart out, so we're going to do final thoughts. Karen, any final thoughts on conventions before you have to go?
Oh, man. Conventions, I love them. It's the place to see your friends. I get to panels when I can, and when I am a moderator on a panel, I try to do the best job I can.
And Jeff?
The one I forgot to mention was Necronomicon, which this year is the same weekend as WorldCon, but it's notable for its Sunday morning Cthulhu prayer breakfast. Always favorite.
Oh, boy. Yeah, because that can't possibly backfire. Django?
Not much. You know, I advise going to cons, especially if you are, I mean, it's fun for fans. You know, if you're a fan, you either like cons or you don't like them. But if you're an aspiring writer type, then go to cons, especially the small cons, World Fantasy, if you can swing it and meet people.
And learn.
It's essential. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much good information to be had there.
Yes, absolutely. Gail?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of cons. I wouldn't do them if I didn't enjoy doing them. There's a lot of range. I mean, I didn't even mention things like Yell Fest, and there's librarian events, and there's a whole young adult bent if you're in that direction. There's pretty much, you're pretty much guaranteed to find something within driving distance at the very least. And the smaller cons are way more affordable. You don't have to go the whole time. You can go for just a day usually. And if you really don't have the funds, there's usually a big active volunteer. And that's another great way to be at a convention and to meet people mm-hmm. because, you know, working it. So there are lots of ways.
Shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, yeah, let me just plus 1,000 on that. Volunteering at conventions is one of the best ways to meet people if you don't know anyone yet.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really, yeah. And then you meet and make friends within fandom. And you know, like the people you are helping out in the volunteer room at a small Texas convention, they're bidding on and winning WorldCon when it comes to San Antonio. And suddenly you're working at a WorldCon and meeting everybody. And you're guest liaison and you get to like run around with Pat Rothfuss all day long or something. You know, like it's pretty fun. I used to work at conventions quite a bit. So I like both sides of the fence.
Well, a small convention like ICFA, I started volunteering the first couple years I was there, and within, 4 or 5 years, I was the vice president. Go figure.
Yeah, be careful. They'll just keep, if you're capable, they'll just keep giving you more and more responsibility.
Yes.
The reward for good work is more
yeah,
work.
Yeah, is more work.
Yes.
Yeah, and then I just want to give a quick shout-out that I am doing a author tour, which is not a convention, but if you want to come and see me, they're free. and you can find out the details on my website. But it's March, the second week of March, the week starting the 17th, and I will be in San Diego, Portland, Denver, Dallas, Houston, and San Francisco. So
very cool.
Come and see me of an evening.
And
I promise to be entertaining.
And if you're in Chicago on Valentine's weekend, come to Capricorn and say hello to me and John. Alrighty. Well, and if you, I know we've mentioned a lot of sort of big cons and that kind of stuff. As Gail mentioned, if you go to google.com and you search your town name or your major metropolitan area name and science fiction convention, you will find something. There's something nearby that you can go to. If it's a creation con, leave your wallet at home.
Ask your local indie bookstore, too.
Yes.
They're often tapped into the community. They know what's going on.
Yeah, creation bad. Sorry, creation people, but bad. Creation bad. All right, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Thank
Patrick.
You.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene.
Emergency exits are located and numbered on the road. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually doing the hand gestures too, by the way. I know you guys can't see it.
Of course you
but
are.
But I am doing them. Because I talk with my hands. I should have been a puppeteer.
Mary Robinette Cal's got you beat.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore out there, Romeo?